Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, A-State football is red hot. We're going to recap their four straight win, get you ready for the biggest home game in a really long time. Meanwhile, the basketball teams open their seasons Monday night. What a debut for Ryan Pannone. We'll talk about that. Volleyball with another great week. They've got a couple of huge matches on the road this weekend. We'll cover that and a whole lot more, but we're going to start this episode with cross country. The Sun Belt Championships were held this past Friday in Foley, Alabama. The women finishing fifth in the team standings. The men finished second in the team standings, but for the eighth time in program history, the men's individual champion was a Red Wolf. An amazing late surge by Carlo Martinez Jaramillo gives him the win, and the junior from Gatesville, Texas, happens to join us in studio right now. Hello, Carlo.
How's it going?
Congratulations. How's it feel to be a Sun Belt champion?
Feels great. You know, I'm taking it all in after I crossed the line. I celebrated with my teammates for a couple hours and realized I need to keep working hard so I can win with dominance next time and not just with the final surge.
But you told me that was your first win. So, I mean, we've talked about, I mean, you have the ability to pick your spots. If you're going to win one, make it the conference championship.
Yes, sir. That was my first win. It was an honor. I worked really hard for it, but it's just another step in the right direction for where I want to go in the sport.
Well, I want to talk about this race because we've seen the video. It's amazing just how you won that race at the very end. It's an 8K. You finish with the time of 24:04. You won by 0.2 of a second, and you saved that kick for the very end. I saw you were down 15 seconds, a whole 15 seconds at the final checkpoint. So how far out is that?
That's about a kilometer out. That's about 2.5 track laps.
The level of difficulty with a kilometer left to erase a 15-second deficit, I'm guessing that doesn't happen very often.
It doesn't happen very often. It was weird, but I had to give it all for my team.
When did you start your kick? How far out are you?
I'd say about 800 meters in. Third place guy came up on me, and with 400 meters left, I had nothing left in the tank. It was just primal instinct. I said, I have to go get second place at least for the team so we can have a chance and shot for first.
So it wasn't like this intentional. You'd stored it. Like you had spent what you thought you had to spend and found something extra at the end.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right.
All right. So, again, we saw the video, and I'm guessing the video starts, you're maybe 100 meters out?
Yes,
and
sir.
And I don't know how far behind you are at that point. Maybe 25 meters behind, and you're coming hard, and you pass the guy that's in the lead with maybe 10 meters to spare, right?
Yes, sir. So everybody thought I had gotten second. I was in third place coming into the last 100 meters. And, you know, with 10 meters left in the race, I pass first and I become first place guy. Everybody flips out. I wasn't expecting it. Nobody was. It's a real comeback story.
So you said everybody thought you finished second, but was it 0.2 of a second?
Is yeah. That
what when you got to the line, did you know you'd finish first?
When I got to the line, I knew I had finished first.
I saw the picture. There was a huge smile. He knew he won at that point.
Yeah, I put my arms across. I was happy. I knew I beat him to the blue tape.
All right, so we're talking about him, and we'll get into your story more in depth here in just a moment, but he had a ULM on his shirt. You're a transfer from ULM. from this past season. So is that a former teammate of yours?
That was not a former teammate of mine. KG, his name, second place guy. He's a transfer to ULM from Cameron, so I never got the opportunity to be teammates with him.
Well, I don't know. I mean, is there a little satisfaction beating your former team at the very end?
There was plenty of satisfaction there. I was happy. I mean, I had been talking about being Sun Belt Conference champion since I got to college, and to do it at Arkansas State, having transferred here after the seasons and unknowingness, it was just really cool to beat ULM out.
So what's it like, and I will pretty much reverse engineer this conversation at this point, but it's kind of where we are. So when you're at another Sun Belt school, like, what's your perception of Arkansas State? Because, I mean, like, they're mad that they haven't won a conference championship in a minute because they've, you know, Coach Patchell's only got about 30 of them. So, like, when you're somewhere other than Arkansas State in the Sun Belt, what do people think about Arkansas State?
When I was at ULM, I looked at Arkansas State, and I knew they were a championship program. I wanted to be a championship program, and if I wasn't in one, I wanted to build one. My first year at ULM, for the first time in history, ULM placed third, and I thought they were on the come up. Unfortunately, ULM cannot keep a cross-country coach, so we got a new one for my sophomore year, and then at the end of my sophomore year, he transferred out. When he transferred out, I decided I am going to enter the transfer portal. And Coach Jesse from Arkansas State.
Jesse Duvall.
Yes, sir. Amazing coach. First coach to reach out to me. I had been in the portal for 5 minutes, and he had texted me. And as soon as I got that text, I said, Arkansas State, the championship program, they have a team, they have a coach, they are a program that I would love to be a part of. You can look at Arkansas State and know that they have championship morales and great mindsets and coaches and everything of the sort.
Yeah, if you're looking for stability after all those coaching changes at ULM, you came to the right place.
Yeah, really.
Because you're not going to get more stable than Coach Patchell and Coach Duvall, because you see what they've done over a long period of time now. So was there a relationship already? Obviously, being around the Sun Belt, and you mentioned Jesse Duvall reached out right away after 5 minutes. I mean, had you talked before?
I had never talked to him before, but I had talked to
him. He knew
who
you were, obviously.
Yes, sir. He knew who I was. I had talked to plenty of Sun Belt Conference competitors, and some of my teammates now I had talked to before on the line, before and after races, just because I'm a smiley guy. So I'd go up to my competitors, say good luck, start chatting them up. And when I told one of my teammates now, I had told him, hey, I'm going to enter the transfer portal. And I think he's the one that told Jesse that I was going to be in the portal.
It's cool that you ended up here at Arkansas State, and you had had success at ULM. 2023, you were the freshman and the newcomer of the year. You had made all conference. So it's not like you weren't having success at one school and you were trying to go somewhere else to accomplish something. It sounds like you just wanted a stable program and a place where you could grow. And obviously, you've been able to succeed in a big way here. How has Coach Jesse been able to kind of take you to a different level?
The training program. That is really a lot of what it is. He believes in the goals that I have set for myself, and I can believe in his program. His coaching style surpasses plenty of Big 12, SECs. He could be a pro coach if he wasn't here. That's how good his training is. And so to come onto a program like Arkansas State and be surrounded by other athletes that have pro ambition and want to be not just good but the best alongside an amazing coach, it changes everything. When I was at ULM, I did 40 to 50 miles in a week. And when I came here, I talked to Jesse. We talked about mileage, and over the summer, I upped it. 13-week span, I got up to 75 miles per week and kept building. So being supported by a great coach has made all the difference.
Yeah, Bobo and I drive at least 75 miles.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, without having to go somewhere out of the norm, I don't know that I drive 75 miles a week. I'd have to look at it. Hey, I want people to get to know about you a little bit, and we talked before we started recording. Clearly the best thing to ever come out of Gatesville, Texas. But you mentioned that you are a first-generation U.S. resident. Tell us about your family.
My family, they're very young. They grew up close to Tijuana, Mexico. And so my mom saw Mexico really for what it is. My entire family had seen Mexico for what it is. And not that it's necessarily bad in every single place, but America is the land of opportunity. And my mom saw that and decided I was going to be a U.S. citizen. And so there I was, born in National City, California. And we didn't have the funds to live in California because it's expensive. I mean, you have both federal and state tax over there. $7 for gas now, like that's insane. So we lived in Mexico 5 years. We ended up getting funds and moved to a almost apartment style house in Gatesville, Texas when I turned 5. It was not great. But I was in Texas, I was in the U.S., in the land of opportunity. I'm going to make it. And my mom believed in me. That house gave me the opportunity. It was a house that had cockroaches climbing around, and it was just like a small room I was sharing with my two sisters and mom, just one room, and my grandma and my uncle. So it was like 5 or 6 of us in one little house with maybe 2 bedrooms and 1 bath. And she ended up making it. She has a nail tech business now, and we have a food business in Gatesville as well. So seeing my family go through thick and thin with one another and work through hardships to make it themselves has always inspired me to be the best version of myself and really keep trying and pushing myself past my own limits. So I love my family for what they are. They came and watched me at the Sun Belt, and they've always supported me. I have so much love for them.
Fluent in both, but what was your first language?
Spanish.
Yeah.
Spanish was my first language, and I was in ESL until like 4th grade, just learning English.
We really don't have to ask you where you get your work ethic from. It sounds like, I mean, your mom is quite an inspiration to go out and train the way you do. I'm sure a lot of that comes from the example that your mom set for you.
So yes, it absolutely does. And really the training ethic wasn't always there, but my mom kept encouraging it. My mom is the one who told me to run, told me that I would be good at running. I had all these ambitions, but I never had the work ethic. I said my freshman year of high school, I'm going to be a state champ. And my mom said, I believe you. You need to work at it. You need to keep going, work hard. And I said, and I'm going to be a Division I athlete too. And my mom never said, no, you're not. She always believed in me. Even when I wasn't putting in the work, she told me I needed to. She was always there pushing me. And eventually, I started working. I kept telling myself what I'm going to be, what I'm going to do, what I'm going to accomplish. And I accomplished everything that I said I was going to do. I became a state champ. I became a Division I athlete. And recently, I just became a Sun Belt Conference champion.
And you said she was at the race. So what's that moment like, seeing her after getting your first win and being for the conference championship?
I had crossed the line, and I heard a big scream. That was my mom. It was 3 seconds crossing the line, and my mom was on top of me giving me a hug. And my stepdad was as well. He's been a big part of my life, and I love them both very greatly. It was a really nice moment seeing them there and watching what I had accomplished. But really, none of my accomplishments would be realized if I didn't have my mom and stepdad, Sarai and Jacob, both raise me the way that I am.
Man, that's good stuff.
Yeah, you think that's cool now? Wait till you're old like us and think back on that. It's going to mean something entirely different. Just remember that.
So she pushed you to run. Did you play any other sports, or was it always just running?
Yeah, so high school was pretty jam-packed for me. I went to a 4A school, Gatesville, Texas.
Right smack dab in the middle of Texas, near Waco.
Pretty much. I mean, 40 minutes from Waco. Not a lot there. There's disc golf, and a Walmart. That's pretty much it. So it's funny because when I come here to Jonesboro, I tell people there's plenty of things to do.
Actually, there's one other thing in Gatesville.
An HEB.
And what's the thing you said boosts the population?
Yes, the prisons.
Yeah.
There's a lot of prisons, you know. Selena's manager or president of her fan club, her killer, is in Gatesville, Texas.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But I did band in high school for about 2 years. I played trumpet. I also played tennis, and I ran. So, you know, after 2 years of band, I turned 16. So I had to pick band or tennis because running was a non-negotiable for my parents. They said, you have talent. You just haven't realized it. So I leave band, and I start working at Walmart at 16. So most of my days in high school went like this. I'd wake up around 5:30. I'd go run. I'd go to school, then play tennis from 3 to 5, get ready for work, and work from 6 to 10 at Walmart, and go home and go to sleep.
Man, that's a lot for a high school kid. And I don't know any currently that work like that.
It was a lot, but I wanted money, you know, and to be successful, I had to work in my endeavors. I wasn't going to be a good runner if I didn't run.
And now that work ethic, not just on display in what you've done on the track, but you're working with other athletes. So to kind of tell us about your side hustle.
Yes, sir. So I am the Lotus running coach. In June of 2024, I told my parents, I was like, I'm not making any money right now. I don't have a job. I'm just a bum. I had never not had a job. So I made a business. I created a website, lotusrunning.com, and I started coaching athletes. I made a Instagram page called The Lotus Running Coach, and I started reaching out to athletes. I said, hey, let me coach you. I'll coach you for free, right? Just to get my first few athletes to start getting some recognition when they have success. And within my first year, I had, I believe it was 4 collegiate commits, one to Johns Hopkins, one to Rice University, another one to New Orleans. I had 2 state champions. One state champion was the athlete of the meet in Texas. He ran 152, 415, and 914. And after that, it was kind of history. I'm still coaching athletes, but after that first successful year, I had 21 athletes this past summer. I charge $50 a month. So if you do the math, that's about $1,000 a month just from coaching athletes and doing something that I enjoy. See, I coach with affordability because, like me, my family didn't have a whole lot of money, but my parents still splurged in a personal coach for me my senior year. And I saw that, and I was like, some of these coaches charge $150 to $250 a month for good coaching. I'm going to charge $50 a month so I can give these kids that have talent the opportunity to be good.
So you're giving them running programs through correspondence, however that may be?
Yes, sir. I do it on a program called Final Surge. I give them training plans, strength training plans, rehab from injury. Actually, one of the state champions I coached, when I first got him, he was injured, and I coached him back to a state championship.
Final Surge is pretty fitting.
Yeah.
I just had one of those.
Yes, sir.
Yes, you did, Carlo. So, all right, you're not done. You just won the Sun Belt Championship. You got regionals coming up. You'll be in Fayetteville on the 14th. So what do you do to prepare for that?
All the hay was stacked already. I just need to keep running. Over the summer, I ran a lot. I actually had a similar schedule to what I had in high school. Over the summer, I had an internship at an insurance company called Amlin's. But through the summer, I built up through the 13 weeks up to 75 miles, got in the season, was running 85 miles a week. And that culmination of fitness is what's going to carry me through regionals. It's not a set workout that's going to make me fit for regionals, but that consistency and culmination of work having been put in is what will prepare me perfectly for regionals.
The other thing I've always been impressed with Coach Patchell and Coach Duvall here is that, like, they set their training up with the big picture. Like, they don't even necessarily put these athletes, these student athletes, on a schedule to peak at the conference championship. They build it to where they've got enough left in the tank for the postseason. Like, they've got bigger aspirations for their athletes. I've always been impressed how they literally build the program to where you've got something left to give in the regional and beyond.
Yeah, so that's something that me and Coach Jesse had talked about. I really want to make a bid for nationals. That would be awesome. So going into this regional meet, I have a chance to make it to nationals. It's not a huge chance, but I'm just going to go and leave it all out on the line, trusting Coach Jesse and his training, because you can't have fitness without trusting your coach and what he's doing. And I trust him 100%. If I leave it all out there, maybe I make it to nationals, maybe I don't. But at the end of the day, it's the end of the day.
Well,
yeah.
Good luck. I mean, it's awesome you're getting this opportunity. So do you want to keep running after college? What are your long-term goals? Do you want to go into more coaching after college?
I want to keep coaching, and I want to keep running. You know, my major is business management, but after my internship, I realized I really like coaching. If I'm not running professionally or in the Olympics for Mexico because I have dual citizenship, then I'll keep running myself and keep being coached and keep coaching. Running's always going to be a part of my life. And some people hate running, but I love it. It's what I look forward to the most every single day.
As you mentioned, first-gen U.S. citizen. I would also imagine, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that first-gen college student too?
Yes, sir. First-generation college student as well.
So, again, I think you'll get older and all that stuff will mean more, but what do those things mean to you now to kind of have both those titles?
It just means I have something to prove for my family. Just means I need to go out there and show that I can be something, that my family can be something, that you can come from almost nothing and be somebody.
It's a thrill to see what you're doing.
Yeah.
And what a story that you have. We appreciate you coming in and sharing it with us today. And, man, we've known you for 30 minutes, and we're already big fans.
Big fans, yeah.
So good luck at regionals and the rest of the way, Carlo.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same: you first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Back on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by the Kavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Kavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at KavanaughCars.com.
So, you know, we had this run and kind of this bit we would do where we'd say we would go after trying to make the podcast guest get emotional. That did not happen with Carlo, but it nearly like backfired. It almost happened with me a time or two along the way there.
Good gosh. Me too. What a work ethic. What a story. Just, you know, his family coming from where they have to now being as successful as they are and just thriving, and to see Carlo doing what he's doing. But really, really appreciate Carlo coming in. Enjoyed that visit immensely. And I'm not kidding. We sat there and got to know him for 30 minutes, and we're huge fans of his now.
That was really cool.
All right, so we're huge fans of this football team too. Man, they're playing some good ball. Four in a row for Butch Jones' team. I don't think there's any doubt the most impressive win yet came this past Saturday at Troy, a Trojan team that had won five in a row. It was their homecoming. A night game, a game we were really looking forward to all week. Two really evenly matched teams, it seemed, going in. But I love the way our guys came out and got off to a great start. We've talked about the start of games so often this year. And when the Red Wolves got in trouble early in the year, a lot of it had to do with some slow starts. But in this case, it was the Red Wolves coming out and just punching Troy in the mouth right away. The defense gets a stop as Troy had the football first on the game's opening drive. Then we get it. The offense drives right down the field. Had the big 51-yard pass to Chauncey Cobb. Finished off the drive with the 4-yard touchdown pass to Tyler Fortenberry. Then you get another stop by the defense. Offense drives right back down the field. Another touchdown drive that ends with a beautiful throw and catch from Jalen Rayner to Hunter Summers. And we're less than 7 minutes in. It's already 14-0. A-State leads 17-0 after one quarter and goes on to a 23-10 win.
Yeah, it was just a picture-perfect start. Been on the varying levels. You know, even against Georgia Southern, kind of gave up the 14-0 start, but it didn't seem like that because you kind of had the immediate answer after that. Or even, you know, you knew you'd driven down the field and kind of threw a fluky interception on the goal line. This was a little bit more akin to, you know, on the receiving end of maybe that start down at Kennesaw State, where you don't, it's not you just punch them in the mouth to start and then we'll just see what happens. It's punched them in the mouth and then just held them down and never let them up.
Look, the start was a big storyline from this one. The defense was the other big storyline. They were absolutely dominant.
I didn't realize
dominant
until I heard on the ticket on Monday that, you know, for as one-sided as the first quarter seemed, Troy had more yards in the first quarter than they had in the other three.
It's amazing some of the numbers that came out of this. The thing that jumped off the page to me, you know, we allow 187 yards. As the game's wrapping up, I text Mark Taylor and I said, okay, when's the last time we held an FBS opponent under 200? You got to go back to 2011, that 47-3 home win against Memphis. Ooh. That was the last time we held an FBS opponent under 200 yards. The last time we held a conference opponent under 200 yards, you got to go back to 2006 against FIU. We weren't even the Red Wolves then. We were still the Indians. And that's how far you got to go back. 19 years, the last time we held a conference opponent under 200 yards. So that was amazing.
That FIU team, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, wasn't undefeated in conference play at the time.
No, they were not 6-2 and 4-0 in the league going in. And then the pass rush.
Ugh.
We've seen this build over the last several weeks. That defensive line is fierce now. You look at Ethan Hassler, DeMarcus Hendricks, Brian Whitehead, Cody Sigler, Simeon Mitchell. These guys are coming, and I'm just getting warmed up with those guys on the defensive line that are playing well right now. But there's so many of them. Chris Bodie, Marcus Bradley had a sack the other day. 9 sacks on the night. That's second most in school history and tied for the most in the entire nation this year.
I have no clue what his stat line was, and he might not have gotten in on any of those 9 sacks. But watching this game on television, the dude that jumped out to me, gets a shout out for me, is Cody Sigler, because he put, and I'm just going to say it, I'm sorry, he put so many dudes on their asses. He was just blowing people up left, right, and center. Just putting them flat on the ground. And so even if he didn't make that play, he was opening the door for somebody to go in and wreak havoc, because he was just
Cody did. He did have a sack. I think it was the 8th one, because we had a couple on that very last drive for Troy, and Cody just body slammed Tucker Kilcrease. And hey, shout out to Tucker Kilcrease.
Yes.
I can't imagine how much pain he was in Sunday morning when he woke up, because he was getting hit all night long. What a tough kid to take that abuse.
I just can't tell you how many times you'll remember, you know, looking up and, or just watching a play and seeing somebody getting blocked all the way out of the picture or just knocked down, and you look and it was 94 that was doing that to him. He was just a beast.
It was so fun to watch. And look, there were 9 sacks. There's one play in the first half, and I even text Mark about it during the game. I said, look, can we get that changed to a sack? It was an RPO. Troy's lined up in the shotgun, and Tucker Kilcrease fakes the handoff, keeps it, and Brian Whitehead just comes and trucks him. And Tucker Kilcrease never moved. But because the offensive linemen were downfield, technically they scored that as a tackle for a loss.
Run blocking it.
He didn't have 3 seconds to get rid of it. And Kilcrease never moved, ever. I mean, didn't move an inch. So in my mind, that should be a sack. That should have been 10 sacks. But it was just dominant, the whole defensive performance. And then some offensive stuff. You know, Jalen Reagor throws for 247 and 2 touchdowns. He moves from 6th to 4th on the all-time passing yards list at A-State. He passed Corey Leonard and Lane Hatcher on Saturday. And then Corey Rucker moved into 2nd on the Sun Belt's all-time receiving yards list. He passed a pretty good one the other night, T.Y. Hilton.
Oh.
Still have nightmares about that guy.
Yeah.
Corey is now just 122 yards away from passing Sam Pinckney for the all-time record in career receiving yards in the Sun Belt. So a big feat coming up, and of course, Corey could very possibly do that this week.
I still will go back and say we don't have to get all the way into this, but he'd be further than 122 back if it wasn't for us. Wouldn't have a 300-yard receiving game if it wasn't for us. Really, we're pretty key to this whole operation. Basically, I'm really trying to direct all the credit to you and me here.
At least 30 yards are credited to me and you. For those who don't know that story, that incredible game where he set the NCAA freshman receiving yards record, yeah, he was out of the game, and we let Blake Anderson know, and you were on the sidelines that game. You told Kyle Cefalo, and then the message was relayed that Corey was, I think, 7 yards away from the A-State record.
Yep.
Didn't know the NCAA freshman record was in sight. But we got him back on the field.
He was
right.
Done, yeah. The game was in hand, and they had pulled him. And so, yeah, we'll let him know. He was 7 yards shy of the school record. And they put him in there, and he was getting one crack at it, right? They put it in there, threw it to him one time. And as you said, he needed 7 and got 30, and it put him over 300.
A couple other shout-outs from Saturday. Clune Van Andel. He's Sunbelt Special Teams Player of the Week for a 2nd straight week. He drilled one, a career-long 53-yard field goal to help put it away in the 4th quarter. And then DeMarcus Hendricks finished with 7 tackles and 2 sacks. He was one of several guys that we could have nominated from the A-State defense for Defensive Player of the Week, but DeMarcus was named Sunbelt Conference Defensive Player of the Week. He's got 5 sacks on the year now, and they've all come over the last 3 weeks.
Talk a lot about the defense, but we ran a play I don't remember seeing. Maybe we'd run it, but where we shifted Jalen and Clay and snapped it to him out of the Wildcat. And then, anyway, it was a neat little play. He went for a good gain there early in the ball game.
We've run more Wildcat this year.
He took snapping it up, handing it to Jalen.
Yes,
in the backfield.
I really liked it. It was in the 1st quarter.
Yep.
You're right. It was a direct snap to Kenyon Clay. He handed it to Jalen, and then you hit Tyler Fortenberry on what essentially was a wheel route on that left side, and it picked up 12 yards. But it was a really cool play. All right, so 5-4 overall now for the Red Wolves. They're 4-1 in conference play. Best start to conference play since 2017. And it sets up a really huge showdown this week. Southern Miss in town this Saturday. First place in the Sun Belt's Western Division is on the line. I know you put it out the other day. I saw it on Twitter, the biggest home game since probably that final home game of 2017 when we played Troy for the Sun Belt Championship.
Sort of the last time that you kind of had first place on the line at this stage of the season in a home game. And I know there's plenty of work to do after that. And it's not a situation where for the conference title, the way that 17 game ended up being, but there's not been one this late with these kind of stakes since. And so, you know, for all the people that, you know, we're around in the 2010s and then COVID and coaching changes and all this kind of knocked them off the fence. And you've been waiting for, whether you should have or not, you've been waiting for, you know, a championship run to show back up. Well, we're in one. So show back up.
Kickoff at 11 a.m. Mark Taylor went back. He found that we've never had an 11 a.m. kickoff at home.
So found an 11:50 in 1979, I think. That got moved to 11:50 for a regional TV broadcast. But, yep, never an 11 o'clock kick. So, it's be the earliest home kick, as far as we can tell, in recorded program history.
Red Wolf Walk at 8:45. Man, we need an electric atmosphere.
And they're actually going to adjust that a little bit. So you really got all the way till 9. They actually say they may not do Red Wolf Walk until 9:10. They're going to change their pregame schedule a little bit with the early day. But it's going to get on out there by 8:45 anyway.
Going to be a lot of fun. And, yeah, hopefully we have a great environment, what should be a fantastic football game.
The weather's phenomenal.
Weather looks great. What, mid-70s on Saturday?
Like that, yeah.
And sunshine? Can't ask for anything better on November the 8th.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle? Get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Basketball season is officially underway. We'll start with the A-State men. They open the season in Athens, Ohio on Monday night. The Red Wolves able to win the opening game of the Ryan Pannone era. The Red Wolves win in a really tough place to play. Jeff Bowles has been the head coach at Ohio for the last 7 years. In that span, Ohio is 73-17 at home. There were 5,500 in there on Monday night, and the Red Wolves are able to win by that 89-85 score. It was a really weird first half. It was a first half that saw a lot of foul calls. A lot of offensive foul calls against the Red Wolves. I've never seen more offensive fouls ever called against one particular team, especially in one half. A lot of them were on the iffy side. But there was never any panic. The Red Wolves ended up turning it over 15 times in the first half. Went on a 15-1 run at one point, but then Ohio later answered with a 16-0 run. A-State was down 7 at the intermission, but again, the Red Wolves able to come back and win it by 4. A-State just dominated on the glass. They out-rebounded Ohio by 16. It was 41-25 on the boards. We mentioned the 15 first-half turnovers. Red Wolves only turned it over 3 times in the second half. Chandler Jackson was fantastic. The Florida State transfer had 21 points. That was a new career high for him. 8 rebounds and 5 assists. And Joey Chama, the San Diego transfer, he had 21 points as well. 17 of those came in the second half. He hit 4 threes. So the Red Wolves able to win it. It was great to just see those guys celebrate. They were so excited afterwards. So excited for Coach Pannone to be able to celebrate in the locker room. First Red Wolf head coach to win their debut since Dickie Nutt back in 1995. So 30 years since an A-State head coach had won his debut. And even more impressive, he was able to do it on the road.
Yeah, obviously great wins. You mentioned tough atmosphere. And I mean, right by design, these are hand-picked matchups. They're trying to get good on good. Mm-hmm. So you knew you were getting sent to a tough place in the MAC. And great start. And I know Joey Chama had to be excited to hit some shots because you knew that he was about to, and they're probably going to come in bunches. And because that dude can flat out shoot it.
He can. Red Wolves looking for another win coming up Friday. They'll be at Stephen F. Austin. Tip off at 6 o'clock for that one. Let's talk about the women. They opened their season at home against Ball State on Monday. I know you called this one, and we'll get to the game, but obviously a lot surrounding the game, the banner drop and the ring ceremony. How was all that?
It was good. Actually, it was a banners drop. The only one the team, I think, knew about or had seen was the one for the NCAA tournament. So we kind of hopefully they were surprised to see one get unveiled right beside it. It said 2025 Sunbelt Conference Tournament Champions. So those are both in the rafters now. Running Threads made it all happen by providing the whiteout T-shirts. It's always such a cool visual to see any arena, and ours in this case, covered up with T-shirts that are out on every seat. And then, a good crowd that, I'll be honest, and I said this on social media, kind of surprised me when A-State went on a run. I'm sure we'll talk about it here in a second. Like, they got in it, and they were making some noise. it was a really fun little atmosphere in there. Something that hopefully will carry over as we keep this season going.
Ball State ends up winning it 68-66. That's a really good Ball State team. Yep. That was also in the tournament a year ago. I know it was a slow start for the Red Wolves. They did go on a big run in the second half, 20-0 run, yeah. Tied it up after three, and then Ball State able to find a way at the end.
You know, honestly, I was thinking about, you know, this coming into today. It's kind of weird how similar the Henderson State exhibition and the Ball State games turned out to be. Really slow starts, and that's something, you know, Dez and the coaching staff will address, because they've had two really bad first quarters, and that, there's just no other way to put it. But then in each case, different points of the game, but in each case, you know, they've made a monster run at the other team. And I'll say this, to Henderson's credit and to Ball State's credit for sure, on Monday night, they took a shot in the mouth and got up. I mean, they were down by eight. You know, we went from down 12 to up eight early in the fourth quarter, and Ball State weathered the storm and kind of hit some shots because, I mean, they were throwing it all over the yard. Ball State turned it over 35 times.
Goodness gracious.
Because that defense is, I mean, it is what we're used to seeing. It was relentless.
And we turned it over 15 times, so now, plus 20 in the turnover count.
The difference is, it's interesting because the men were money, almost automatic from the free throw line, and won a close game.
25 of 28.
Women missed 17 free throws and lost by two.
Mm.
This defies logic, but you and I have seen a zillion games. And I can't tell you why this is true, besides it's true. Making free throws is contagious, and so is missing them.
Very true. Yeah, we've seen it many times over.
I mean, for all the things of the slow start and not hitting shots and all the things, and quite honestly, I only say this because you kind of the video evidence backs it up. Crystal and Rose got fouled on each of A-State's last two possessions and didn't get a call. Okay. Really doesn't go much further than you missed 17 free throws and lost by two. And the other thing that I take from this is just the continued evolution of Coach Dez, because talked to her after the game, and literally, basically, as soon as she walked off the floor, stood in the hallway with her for a second. She had a million things she could have been mad about: the start, the missed free throws, the this to that, the no calls at the end. There was a bunch of stuff she could have been mad about, and she wasn't. Her takeaway was, man, we're so much further ahead than we were this time last year, and that's 100% true.
Well, she sees the big picture.
Yep.
They'll be back in action coming up on Friday, 11 a.m. They'll be at Tarleton State. So a chance there for the first win of the season.
We get a Gatesville, Texas, and a Tarleton State.
My goodness.
Both in this podcast.
Central Texas getting all
Jerry
kinds
Scott's
of...
not even the guest.
All right, let's talk volleyball. Another great week for Coach Gerwig's team. They swept the Cajuns on Friday. Really quick match. They won three sets to none. And then Saturday, 3-1. Volleyball now 16-7 on the year. They're 9-3 in conference play, and a huge weekend coming up. They're at South Alabama Friday at 6, Saturday at 1. And this is for first place in the division.
Sure is. So, big one coming down the stretch. At South Alabama, the team there right there fighting for the West lead with before they come home the weekend after that.
I know the soccer season has been disappointing. They finished 4-7-4, but it was good to see them finish with a win last week. Field conditions called for the game to actually be moved to Valley View High School, and the Red Wolves ended up beating Coastal Carolina 1-0. Keelan Peacock with the game's lone goal.
Yeah, people don't know a lot of times because you just don't have as much familiarity with the soccer roster, but they dealt with a bunch of injuries, and a lot of them, like even before they got the season started, they were kind of shorthanded from the get-go. And I'm glad you mentioned Valley View, because maybe somebody's asking, well, why'd you go play at Valley View when you've got a football field with turf? That's a pretty simple answer. Valley View, their football field's multi-purpose. It's designed and built with dimensions where they play soccer on their football field. At the Vault, it's not. The field at the Vault is not regulation size for soccer. They play a spring match in there that doesn't count because the players love to play in the stadium, but you have to make some concessions, you know, on dimensions. Yeah. So that's why you didn't see that at Centennial Bank Stadium, because the field's not the right size. But Valley View has been a good partner to Arkansas State this fall.
Yeah, played a volleyball match in there earlier this year against Missouri. Bowling, they're going to be at the Bulldog Classic, hosted by Louisiana Tech in Fort Worth, Texas, coming up this weekend. Tennis will be in Los Angeles this weekend. They'll be competing in the CSU Northridge Invite. And I do want you to be able to talk about this here. Baseball was at home this weekend. We think this is the first time that A-State's actually hosted fall games against somebody else and actually had a conference opponent. ULM was in here this weekend.
Yeah, how about that? I got to see the first of those two games and kind of shifted over to volleyball for a while. They played two eight-inning games, and A-State won the first game with what would have been a walk-off. They kind of kept playing even a little bit past that because it's kind of whose line is it anyway? The score doesn't matter all that much, you know. But ULM scored two in the top of the eighth to take a lead, and then the Red Bulls scored some in the bottom of the eighth to win, including an Ashton Quiller home run.
Said he hit a couple, right?
That it was his second of the game. And this one, you just had to see it to believe it. And I would love to ask him if he thought this ball was getting out, because I don't know if I've ever seen a home run like this at that ballpark. It was a laser. I don't think it was ever a foot higher than the wall and landed in the ULM bullpen. It was just a rope that just carried out. And then, I mean, it was just on a straight line.
Ashton Quiller, one of many, many reasons to be excited about A-State baseball this year. He's near the top of the list, though, because, man, was he fun to watch last year, watching him as a freshman start the season in the nine hole. He ended the season as our leadoff hitter, probably the best defensive center fielder in the league already. But, man, what a fun player to watch.
Yeah, and so he looked good. Pitching was good. You know, Jack Nelson went out first. And it wasn't, at least in that first game, it wasn't a thing where it was just a steady stream of we're getting eight guys in. They played fairly game-like where, you know, guys threw multiple innings. And so, yeah, it was fun to have fall baseball, which, again, you know, I think Coach Silva was surprised to hear none of us could ever remember having. Not, it caused me to have, you know, we were having to try to think of some stuff we hadn't thought of, like on the fly. We're making some decisions like, well, oh, crap, you know, I may need to round up some rosters here so we know who these people are. Or, hey, do we play the national anthem before a fall game? There's, like, all these questions coming up that we've never dealt with before. So we found our way through it.
All right, we've covered a whole lot.
Sure did.
Anything else we need to mention here?
No, I mean, there's just obviously Saturday with football, the early kick, ton of promotions. Just get on our social media to check that out. I mean, with Heroes Day and the ability for, you know, veterans and first responders to get their tickets through VetTix and FirstTix, and, you know, Youth Sports Day, we're encouraging people to bring their entire youth teams. They can bring the kids for free. We've got an online form, astateredwolves.com/youthday25, to fill that out, and we'll get in touch with you and get your tickets taken care of. Still those $11 bench seats for an 11 a.m. kick, the first in program history.
Man, that's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to see a big, loud crowd and a battle for first place in the Sun Belt West. Hey, thanks again to Carlo Martinez Jaramillo. Thanks to Davey Stinchcomb for setting that up for us. Thanks again for joining us, and we can't wait to talk to you again next week on our next edition of the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and the Cavanaugh Auto Group.